My name's Ricky W., and I'm an alcoholic. The magic and the power of the steps. My clean date is May 1st, 2006. I was forced to meet you guys on November the 5th, 2005. And it's going to be real quick and fast, so try to bear with me because I'm kind of going to go with when I met my sponsor. When I met my sponsor, I was angry, I was afraid, yet I was in control, and I was violent, and I had a wife, and I had kids around me, and I just didn't know how to be a man without just dominating, controlling, and terrorizing people. Or I was going to people please and make them do what I wanted to do by giving them what I could. So when I met my sponsor, this guy, I had seen him around, and I needed a sponsor. So I saw him. I said, no. But then I went and talked to him. And I asked him for his number, and he said, okay, start calling me. But he said, you got to ask me to sponsor you. So for 3 days we talked. He said, you got to ask me to sponsor you. I said, will you sponsor me? He said, I'll think about it. Keep calling me. So I went home and told my wife, who I've been married to for 13 years, and I got 12 years sober. Her name's Veronica. So I told her, she said, okay. So now this guy, the first thing he did, start reading this book, Call Me Every Day. Why I got to call you every day? Because I suggested it. So I'm reading the book, The Doctor's Opinion, and what happened in The Doctor's Opinion was he asked me questions. How many diseases do I have? I don't know. He said, guess. I said, three. He said, okay. And he said, what are they? I said, I don't know. So from The Doctor's Opinion, what happened is I found out I had one disease, and it's called alcoholism. And it's physical, mental, and spiritual. And that disgusting, sick person I was, that wasn't me. That was sick Rick. I said, what I got to do now? He said, I'm glad you asked. So now we at step one, right? So now I understand I'm not a bad person. So I'm looking at that wife, talking to these kids, and they're looking at me. But I'm starting to talk a little different just by realizing I'm not that guy that I hated. See, that guy wanted to die. So when I found out I had a disease, I found freedom. So we went to step one, and what he did was he had me read it. Then he talked me through it. Then he said, now tell me your story. He said, wait a minute. Before you tell me who you are, he had another guy there, right? So keep in mind, I'm terrified. I don't trust men. I ain't got no man friend. So because I'm willing to tell, to go to inner lens, I tell my story. So I get through telling my story. I'm about like I am now, but I'm scared. I know I'm freaked out because I just told this man some things about me I never told any other man. And I told him in front of another man. So he said, are you okay? I said, yeah. He said, where are you going? I said, I don't know. So he said, well, I tell you what, go to a meeting. I said, okay. So I left my first step and went straight to a meeting. I had to call him because I was freaked out, man. I just shared some stuff I ain't never shared with no other man. I was scared, right? So I was at step two, right? So by this time, before I left, he told me God forgives me. I said, okay, because I didn't have a relationship with God. I knew about God through my family members, but I said, okay, if you say so. So, I get to step two, right? Now you got to choose a God. You got to pick a power greater than you that can restore you to sanity. So you telling me I'm crazy? Step two, restore me to sanity. So I said, okay. So we doing step two. I chose a God through my understanding. And he told me that God loves me and God has forgiven me. So now I chose a God that I can restore me to sanity. And then he moved me on to step three, right? And step three, he started talking about turning my will and my life over to the care of God. So now when I'm at step three, keep in mind, I just met this guy. So I imagine that's the time I came out here. Now that wife I got, she want a husband. I got little nephews with me and they trying to grow up with me as I start practicing this program. Right. So now instead of being dominated and controlling, I start talking to this lady. I start asking her what she think because I'm watching him with his marriage. Right. And I'm going to tell you, this is my impression of him with his marriage. His wife talking to him crazy, and he being humble, saying, yes, dear. His daughter talking to him crazy and he being humble, talking to her. I said, you can't whoop her, but you can whoop that one. What's wrong with you? Whoop her behind. Right? And I'm adamant because I'm angry because he's letting his child talk to him like his wife. So life is going on, but I'm going through the steps. I'm going around him and his family. I'm bringing my insanity into his world. But what he's doing, he's running two households. Because I don't know how to be a man. But I'm watching him. I don't like it, but I'm mimicking what he do. So I start trying to listen to my wife and talk to my wife. So I end up out here with you guys for the first time. And by now I'm talking and I'm learning to talk selectively because like I said, my sponsor and the men I'm around, they'll let me talk. But when they talk back to me, then I had to listen. And I didn't like a lot of what I was hearing. So, but I came out here to the Rock, man, and it was, I believe it was around step three, and it was amazing. I came out here, 400 men. I didn't know what to expect, but I kept talking out here, and I got a lot of hugs. And I started hugging, man. And for the first time with my sponsor, I was like, he's the only guy I'm trusting right now, right? So I'm out here with y'all, and I start hugging people. And man, by the time Sunday morning came, I had hugged some people, so many people. And Saturday night, Friday night, I was at Sex and Sobriety. I met Steve Orr. And cause I thought sex was going to be about how to get my sex life right. And you know, how to do the wife and my girlfriend. You know, I thought I was going to be able to do all this stuff. But Sex and Sobriety talked about loving your wife, being kind. She's your bride. And I'm like, because it's in my world, she was to be controlled, dominated. She needed to be obedient. She needed to make life. If she did what I need to do, we'll be okay. So when I got to that meeting, that was a life-changing moment because I heard other men talking about sexuality and loving and being kind to his bride, praying with his wife, you know, asking her how she's doing, giving her little notes, dating his wife. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff I heard in my first Rock. When I left here, man, I was walking on air, man. And I went home and I called, man, thank y'all for taking me to that Rock. I was so happy to be home. Then, you know, we went on to step four. And I did a 1-2-3 shuffle. I didn't know I could just start over. I get the 1-2-3 and I start drinking again. I get loaded, right? But this time, because I understood the disease and I did 1-2-3 with a thoroughness, I was ready for step four. Because I never wanted to look at me before. So for the first time, I looked at myself and I wasn't afraid. So I get to see who I was, what I was made of. And all of a sudden that wife, she's like looking at me kind of strange. Who are you? Because I'm starting to talk to her. I'm starting to open doors for her. I'm kind of treating her nice. Now, you know, this change didn't happen overnight. So but she was very impressed. To this point, 12 years later, if I don't act like I don't know the Rock coming up, she already got it filled out. Oh, man, I'm telling you, I show up here today because of that wife dressed like this, because I was going to put on jeans and throw on a jacket and I'm ready. But she's like, no, you need to. So she just did this. She didn't ask me. So here I am, right, representing her. And and I talk about her a lot because she survived me, man. I tried to kill that lady, right? And she survived me. But Doc is my sponsor, by the way. Y'all call him Larry R, but he's my friend. So I call him Doc. And Doc, man, he got me in step four, and I was like, okay, I'm looking in there, right? I'm excited. I'm like, what's next? What's next? I'm not joking. I'd be like, man, when we going next? He said, I got you. Just follow. Man, I was running behind this guy because he was going to tell me to leave my wife. See, because even though I was in recovery, I was still pushing her, shoving her, right? And he almost told me to leave my wife back at before step one. I said, please, give me another opportunity. Because what I didn't share with y'all, I didn't tell him. But, see, I knew I was going to drink again. I knew I was going to get loaded again. So what I did, I made a promise to myself. I'm going to do everything he say. If he suggested, I'm going to do it because when I get drunk, I'm going to blame him. I swear to God. If I get drunk, it's going to be his fault. And I'm going to do everything he say. And to this day, I don't do everything you say, but that first year I did. Because I didn't want to get loaded, but more important, I didn't want him to tell me to leave my wife because I was violent to that lady. And he said, she's going to kill you. You're going to kill her. You're going to end up in prison. I said, just give me, I got this. Promise you. And he did. And I'm still with that lady 13 years. And Doc is, and my wife loves Doc. Because at step five, I got the freedom that I never known before, see. Because now I had to sit down with him again. And this time, when we did step five, he said, now tell me your story again. And this time it was he and I. And I was so ready, man. And because I didn't tell him then the first time. This time, I'm ready to tell him. And I'm telling him stuff and telling him stuff. And I'm nervous because I'm telling him some real secret stuff that I don't share with nobody ever. This stuff going to the grave. And then he started telling me stuff. I said, damn, you sick. But anyway, man, I found a freedom out of step five where it says it's like the weight of the world lifted off my shoulders. And at this point, I think I'm starting to feel like I'm deserving of God's love and forgiveness, and that I'm not a bad guy. And that wife and those kids I mentioned, you know, they going to church with me. And these little boys, I'm like, yo, man, God, these are my nephews. And I'm just like, look, guys, y'all don't have to do what I did. They saw me getting loaded. They saw me dominant. They saw me insane. Now they watching me grow into this man that I'm becoming, right? And I said, y'all don't have to do what I did. Y'all can start right now fresh. You ain't got to do the drinking and drugging I did. Because it's generational. And they was watching me. Man, you wilt. You do whatever your wife say. Your wife control you. No, I'm honest. I run my house. But they watch her. They watch me looking to her for guidance or approval or agreement. But they saw that as being whipped and controlled. And these little boys, 12, 13, 14, 15. And this is my family. So they got it honestly because that's where I was at, right? So all this is going on, and I move into step six. And step six says, this is the step to separate the men from the boys. I said, oh, yeah, this is some good stuff right here. And for years, step six became my mantra because my self-centeredness wouldn't allow me to see step seven. Step seven said, then I humbly asked God to remove these shortcomings. But I was stuck on six, man, because I was doing things I like doing. I adore my wife, but I like outside. I like other women, too. And I'm struggling with this because I'm going to fix this because step six is my mantra. God's will versus my will. But I'm going to do this. Step seven said, simply ask him to do it. And one day I did. I'm not perfect at that yet, but, man, I ain't where I used to be. And that wife still starting to, man, she really starting to talk about me. Like, I got a good husband. He loves me. I'm like, what you want? Because I'm still that sick guy, right? So then I move into 89, man. And by the time I get to 89, let me back up. Before I go to 89, then I go to another retreat. And it's a smaller retreat. It's called the Heavy Hitters Retreat. See, I'm a heavy hitter up in Atlanta. We meet Saturday at 5 o'clock. Y'all come by there in Atlanta, right? But the Heavy Hitters Retreat, it was so small and so intense. And these guys, because I kept talking, and I was talking about that wife, and I was talking about those kids, and I was talking about my mama. Man, now these guys, they talk back to me. And one guy, I'll never forget, right in my face, he called me a coward. He said, you coward MF. And I was like, and this other guy kind of touched me, right? Because I'm ready to get up and fight. Who he think he talking to? You see? But I was a cowardly act. And this guy, and he's talking about me being my wife because he never beat his wife and he adored his wife. Man, I was so mad. But see, the next man to me saw me bristle up because I was ready to, seriously, who you talking to? So I survived the retreat. I got home. I was crying. Oh! And I was calling all these guys from the head of here. Oh, thank God for y'all, man. He just brought y'all. And they was laughing at me. Cause I was just overwhelmed with emotions. I'm crying. The angry guy. You ain't going to see me cry. You'll never see that. But today I cry. Man, I'm watching a movie and I sit there and cry. My wife said, man up. I am being a man. So anyway, We get to 89, man, and oh, step 8, man, took me back down memory lane, right? And I wrote this list. I say 4 gave me a start, but 8 just stretched it out. Everybody at home. So then I did step 8. Now I got a wife, I got a son, I got a mom, I got all these people, and I ain't made amends to nobody. So I get to step 9, and he explained to me making amends is fixing stuff. And I started talking to people like my wife. She said, okay, honey, talk to my mama. It's okay. My people around me was real easy, right? But this lady, man, 30 years ago, I beat this woman. I beat her naked in her house and ran her up the street naked. And then I had a chance to talk to her. And she acted like it was yesterday. She's always wondered what I did to make you do that to me. And I had the opportunity to tell her it wasn't her, it was me. And me and her cried together on that phone. And today we still friends. Now her husband don't want to meet me because he don't care. He know the story too. But that woman has such a forgiving heart. We're friends today. And we still talk to this day because of this program. So 9, 10, and 11, gentlemen, is maintaining step right. But that step 10 is real powerful because I get to go along and fix things as they go. But let me say this. That wife, she love you guys. She don't know y'all, but she know Doc. My wife in love with Doc. Because Doc showed me how to be a husband, how to be a father, how to be a friend to men. And it's all due to the magic and the power of these steps. And if you want to know more about me and how I got here, you know, we can talk offline. But, man, the magic and the power of the steps has truly changed my life. And that wife get to talking about me today. I still wonder who she's talking about. Because she'll tell anybody, I love my husband. He take care of me. And if nobody else going to take care of me, Ricky will. Thanks, y'all, for letting me share.
And by the grace of God, because this fellowship and this program works, I have been sober since June 29th of 1990. And that is an absolute miracle. I was a drunk and a junkie for 22 years. My first exposure to alcohol and other mind-altering substances happened at a little music festival, which is about to celebrate its 50th year. It's called Woodstock. There we were passing around jugs of hard apple cider, and so that was my first alcohol. Of course, other stuff was going around too, but this is AA. Drugs are in my story, but it's AA that saved my life. It was the magic and power of these steps. I arrived at June 29th, 1990, not believing. I thought when they started talking about this God thing, these people are kind of like, nuts. God? You got to be kidding. You really believe in that? And the magic and power of the steps is that about a year later, that church where I went to my first meeting ordained me and installed me as a deacon. Non-believer to a definite believer. And that magic and power of the steps continued when this past July, I was called, ordained, and installed as a bishop in the church. How do you go from lying, stealing, cheating, drunk, to a servant of the people and of God? The magic and power of the steps. I arrived, and one of the things I really believed about me was that I was a worthless piece of crap. My sponsor and other friends in the program very quickly helped me to understand, although I had done some pretty crappy things, I wasn't crap. I was a sick person. And although there was no cure for my illness, recovery was possible. We can recover from a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. I was very blessed that my first sponsor, who, I don't know, he had more time than dirt. he came up to me after my first meeting, and he looked me in the eyes, and he said, "You want this, don't you?" And I said, "Yes, what do I have to do?" He said, "You got the gift." "Gift? What are you talking about? What's this crazy old man talking about?" He says, "You got the gift of desperation." "That's a gift?" Today I'm here to tell you, absolutely, it is a gift. He was very old school. After that first meeting, he took me into another room in the basement of that church and began explaining to me what AA is and what it's not. And gave me kind of a Cliff Notes version of the steps. And then he asked me, "Do you want to go through these steps?" And I told him, "I told you I was willing to do anything." He would remind me of those words quite often. whenever I would start to balk a little bit, "Remember, you said you were willing to do anything, Jose." And in that other room, the magic of the power of the steps began as he took me through the first three steps. Once we got off our knees after the third step, I knew something was different. I didn't know exactly what yet. But since that night, I've not had any obsession, any desire to drink or to use. Magic and power of the steps. We stopped there because I had begun to get dope sick and vomiting, and I was in a lot of physical pain. So he decided to be generous. He gave me a week to detox, and then we would continue with step four. And by the end of the second week, we had gone through the 12 steps. Now, some people say, "Well, how is that possible?" Well, we each have to go at our own pace. Recovery is a personal thing. But he was a firm believer. In fact, one of the first things he had told me, he said, "If you're a drunk like me, you absolutely need to have a spiritual experience if you want to recover." And that's what the steps are for. Oftentimes, speaking with a newcomer, the misconception is that the steps are to stop me from drinking. The only step that mentions alcohol is that first step. The purpose of the steps, I was taught, was to introduce me to and connect me with a power greater than myself that can do what I cannot do. That power has manifested a number of times in my life. That magic and power of the steps, it never stops. You know, as was mentioned, I spent 12 days in the hospital recently. I've never spent more than overnight in the hospital. And I had lost almost half of my blood. The prognosis initially was not very good. It didn't look like I would make it to the rock. But in step three, I learned to turn things over to my higher power, God, and to trust that He's got my back. He's taking care of me. So I knew if it was His will for me to be here, I was going to be here no matter what. And I'm so grateful. Few people have come up to me and tell me how glad they are to see me. And I tell them, "Thank you. I'm glad you're seeing me and not viewing me." I've had a lot of health challenges in recovery. And each time I've gone through chemo, I'm cancer-free today. Other illnesses, some of which come with aging. Because I know I'm real good looking, but, you know, I am 68 years old. Some people don't believe that. They said, what? Yeah, I am. I don't feel 68 most of the time. In the hospital, I was feeling like 98. The magic and power of the steps, in the hospital, two angels, two of the nurses that took amazing care of me. One was the floor nurse in charge of the floor I went to after I got out of intensive care. The other one was my duty nurse that was like at my beck and call almost. Both of them, as God would have it, were long-term friends of mine in AA. God put the right people in the right place at the right time. And they gave me hope when I wanted to give up. The illness, you know, it's crazy. What happened, even with time, sometimes I find myself playing God and thinking I know best. And in some cases, like this recent case, playing doctor. I live with chronic pain because of some car accidents, and I've been prescribed opiates. As a recovered heroin addict, I can't go there. I don't want to go there. I have not forgotten that last time I got dope sick. And so I thought I was being smart by taking mega doses of Tylenol. And Tylenol tore up my liver. I have cirrhosis of the liver today. The wonderful thing about that, though, is the liver is the one organ that will heal itself once you take away whatever is causing the problem. For me, it felt like it was God said, it's time for a tune-up, Jose. You've been running yourself ragged. I work a lot with young addicts and drunks and taking them to meetings and et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes I don't take time for Jose. And the stress level got to a point where my body began reacting. While in the hospital, which initially, as I said, I went to my doctor's for a routine testing, and when he gave me that little cup to go to the bathroom and fill it up, I passed out in the bathroom vomiting blood. And at that point, we knew that something serious was going on. I had no idea how serious, but God used that to check everything else out. It was like I went in for a tune-up. I don't know if any of you ever use Monroe for your oil change, $14.99. And they'll, after they change it, they give you a list of everything wrong they found. Of course, the idea is they're going to try and sell you to have them fix all those things. A mechanic friend of mine in the program taught me something that he says, once they give you the list, Jose, tell them you really don't have the money right now to your next Social Security check. Don't commit to it, but don't. And so I did that. He says, and bring me the list, and we'll do it for a lot less than they can. So God kind of did that with this. I had every conceivable test from MRI to CAT scan to a heart echo, 14 x-rays, it seems like 1,000 tubes of blood. And they found a number of things that had I not wound up in the hospital, we may never have discovered till it was too late. I have a heart problem. It's nothing serious. But the magic and the power of the steps said, you know what, Jose? We're going to begin treating this before it becomes serious. I have a bleeding ulcer. I have the cirrhosis of the liver. I have a thing that I'm going to mispronounce this word, esophageal varices. They're like veins that run from your throat through your esophagus down to your stomach. And mine had swollen to the point where they were bursting and bleeding. But no matter what I go through, I was taught at the very beginning by my sponsor, there is nothing, Jose, nothing that you're going to go through that together we can't handle. The magic and power of the steps. When times have come where I wanted to give up, when I was going through chemo. Initially, we started up here in Atlanta. I lived in Atlanta 20 years. I had to go home because it was time to practice those principles in all my affairs. And my mama was home by herself, 87 years old. Grateful to have been able to go home and be there for her today. And because since I went home, unexpectedly, four of my younger brothers and sisters have passed away. So I've been able to be there for Mama. And it's amazing how family members, friends, oftentimes I don't see the changes in me. And then my friends, family point out. Sometimes I catch myself saying something and I'll think, where did that come from? The magic and power of the steps. Or I do something, or I do something nice for you. That wasn't me once upon a time. I was not going to do anything nice for you unless there was something in it for me. The nature of reality back then. But this program has opened up a world of possibilities. The magic today, I consider the miracles of the program. There have been many of them. At the beginning, there used to be these coincidences, which I asked my sponsor about. All these coincidences. And he said, coincidence is God's name when he chooses to be anonymous. And I said, oh, wow, that makes sense. Sometime later, he asked me, Jose, so how are those God incidences? And that's what they are. The power and magic of the steps. If I set aside what I think I believe, what I think I know, give it to God. There's probably a few of you here that use the set-aside prayer. It works. It works. This program works. I thank you for letting me share with you. I thank you for being here for me.
My name's Herb, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 25 June 99. My home group is the White House Group in White House, Tennessee. I'd like to thank Bill and the committee for inviting me to share with you how AA and the 12 steps have extended and improved my life. First thing I got to say is this whole AA thing wasn't my idea. My dream wasn't to join AA and so I could become your speaker here this morning. I thought I had a pretty good plan, but I was just going to work hard, get rich, be famous, and somehow or another, my higher power had a different idea. Step one is where we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. I had a bunch of guys I used to play golf with, and we'd hang out at the American Legion after golf, and one of them would say, I bet we're all alcoholics. And somebody else said, yeah, we probably are. I look back at that and say, well, I admitted I was an alcoholic, and I accepted the fact that I was an alcoholic. Things don't work in this program until we want to do something about it. When we find the strength to strengthen the willingness to do something about our disease. This other thing about our lives have become unmanageable. Best example I can think of is I didn't think things were unmanageable, but I remember way back when if I was paying the bills and I couldn't find the water bill or the TV bill, I would think, well, hey, it's free this month. And that would work just fine until they'd turn off the water or the cable and And I realized there's probably a bill there someplace. I guess that's unmanageability. Step two is when we come to believe there's a power greater than ourselves to return us to sanity. I got to say this, that hanging around with you guys, it has improved my sanity. I used to be a wild and crazy guy, but I didn't think I was nuts. But things are going better since I found these rooms and started following the instructions that I've been given. In step three, you know, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand Him. What's the most important word in step three? Decision. I used to think that all the great things in my life happened because of my high intellect and charm. And I've come to realize that anything good that happened in my life happened because of help from above. Today I'm grateful for all the angels that God had working overtime, keeping me alive while I was out there being wild and crazy. And any time that I have any doubt that there's a higher power, that's when I need to remember that if it hadn't been for Him and those angels, I'd have been dead a long time ago. Step four, making a searching and moral inventory of ourselves. I got two thoughts about step four. The sooner the better. As soon as you got one, two, and three figured out, you need to jump into step four. My first four step was real easy. My memory was a little foggy. I didn't remember too much, so all I could talk about was what I remembered. Went pretty slick. The other thing I was told about step four is that you need to schedule your fifth step. You need to get your fourth step out of the way, do your fifth step. You got to keep that schedule. I heard that somebody said that yesterday, and then it works good for me. In step five, we got to admit to God and ourselves and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Let's see, the God part's easy because He already knows about all that stuff. But talking about what we've done with another human being, that's a little tougher. I remember a real tough day in my life when my boss flew down to where I was working and he says, Herb, I think you need to take a little time off and do something about your health. I says, well, okay. And he says, you think you have a little drinking problem? And I'm thinking, maybe, you know. And I knew that he was a recovering alcoholic, so I, somehow or another, I choked out the words that I was probably an alcoholic. He said, when you go home to take a little time off and think about your health, he says, they got a lot of nice treatment centers up there in Minneapolis. Maybe you ought to check one out. And I did that. I can't say it was 100% successful. I did get a little disappointed. I talked him into letting me do outpatient. That was a good idea. And I spent a lot of time analyzing everybody else in our group. But they all seemed to get well quicker than I did. And then one day I had to talk to the counselor, and I said, how come everybody's leaving and I'm still here, you know? And I guess she got tired of me after a while, and she finally wrote a letter and told me I could go back to work. It was after a little more research that I've I found the doors to Alcoholics Anonymous. Step six. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Now, I got to be honest with you. When I got here, I didn't have any defects of character. Might have had a few bad habits. There were a few times I had bad luck. I was a lot better identifying other people's character defects than my own. But I ran into an old-timer that said to me, he says, Herb, if you spot it, you got it. I didn't like that guy. Since then, I've got a new way of looking at things, and if I see somebody doing something I don't like, I think about it and I say, maybe I shouldn't do that stuff either, you know? When I try to start treating other people the way I wanted to be treated, things worked out a lot better for them. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Today I can do that. Today I can ask him, please remove these shortcomings. Help me with this. Help me with that. Thing is that we learn a little bit about God's schedule when we ask these things. His time frame is a little different than mine. I know as a kid that I used to go to Sunday school every Sunday. We had a youth thing on Wednesday night, sang in the choir, did all those things Mom and Dad thought we were supposed to do. But God just didn't answer my prayers with the urgency that I thought that it ought to be. So today I realize that he's a pretty busy guy. There's a lot of drunks out there he's keeping alive. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. I'm a construction worker. I travel a lot. I have no idea who all I need to make amends to. It reminds me a couple of years ago when in the last presidential election, a friend of mine asked me, he said, what do you think about the election? I thought about it. I said, well, he said, I didn't know Hillary pissed that many people off. And when I said that, I realized that sounds a lot like my drinking, because I never knew how many people I pissed off. Come to find out, I probably pissed off everybody everywhere I ever went. Anyway, I know that that today I'm doing a little bit better at it. When I had to start making amends, am I getting ahead of myself here? Step nine, make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Well, that's a whole nother story I got to get to, but when I started to make amends, I realized I didn't know where all these people were. If you had people that you can make direct amends to, that's fine, but most of mine were people out there. And I read a spot in the book that tells me that if you don't know who you need, if you can't find the people that you need to make amends to, you just need to be nice to everybody. And I said, boy, that's awful demanding. But after thinking about it, that's what I need to do. I've got friends that can say, well, I drank for 35 years, and now I've been sober 35 years. And I thought about it, and I said, I'm never going to reach that equation. So I guess I just need to be nice to everybody, and I might put a little dent in that blacklist that I had of all those people I upset. Making amends. What I had to do, That line about injuring yourself or others, oh, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago I did a book study and we studied these 12 steps. And the 12 steps, we got to that part in the book where they talked about injuring others. And somehow when we did that, a light came on and I realized that when I was telling all my fantastic stories about all the important things in my life, that I was probably pissing people off and making other people feel bad and stuff. And it never dawned on me until that time. And the light come on and I realized that, well, I realized I told a bunch of stories. But I made the decision that I was going to become honest. I was going to become truthful, that only true things were going to cross these lips. Believe me, I became a very quiet person. But everywhere I went, I would run into people that I'd have to think about, ooh, what did I say to this son of a gun, you know? Who'd I put down to try and make myself look important? Today I just have to be nice to everybody and things work out a lot better. Step 10, continue to take personal inventory and when I was wrong, promptly admit it. I'm quicker today than I used to be. I like to tell people when I screwed up. Today I can say I was wrong. I wasn't good at that before. But I have to do it every night. Every night I have to review my day. Have I pissed anybody off today? Do I need to make an amend to somebody? And then I can thank God for the nice day that He's given me. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. As we understand Him and praying for knowledge for His will for us and the power to carry that out. I'm not much of a prayer. I do, every time before I say the Serenity Prayer, I say, God bless Mom and the kids, the folks that are here, and the folks that couldn't make it. I had a stepson that had this disease, and we used to call him Wild Bill. And he didn't piss me off too much, but when he made Mama mad, things didn't go good at home. And what I had to do is I included him in my daily prayer about every time we'd say the Serenity Prayer, I'd start off with God bless Bill. And you know, after 2, 3, 4 weeks, after a while, I didn't mind Bill so much. It was okay. Bill probably didn't get better, but I got better. I didn't worry about him. I do a lot of meditation. I do probably more meditation than prayer. I don't know about you guys, but I kind of enjoy that peaceful moment while you're waiting for the doctor. Years ago, I used to hate that waiting. But today, it's a nice, quiet place. I get a chance to think about things. You know, the phone isn't ringing, TV's not on. And I get a chance to think about what's going on in Herb's life. And, of course, while I'm getting ready to see the doctor, I got other things to think about, too. Step 12, had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Try to carry this message to the alcoholic practice principle in all our affairs. When that was first brought to my attention, I'm thinking, how could anybody use these 12 steps in all their affairs? Today I find that I use them every day. I use them at work. I use them at home. I use them on the interstate. And it's a great tool. this spiritual experience, spiritual awakening. I think one of the spiritual awakenings I had was the first time I came to the Rock. I remember Kip C was here. I remember Bob Carver did this little presentation on the power and the magic of the 12 steps. And they knocked my socks off. I heard things that I hadn't heard, or they sunk in further than they'd ever sunk in before. And it put the Rock on my schedule. I had a lot of excuses why I hadn't been here sooner. But after that experience, I haven't missed one since. The Rock is a great part of my recovery. I'm very grateful for it. I'm grateful. Well, I don't know about how the rest of you got here, but I had a, in my life, I thought I had a good plan, I wasn't as sick as y'all that had to go to those meetings. And then I just drank until my health went bad. And when my health went bad, it's when I met my cardiologist. And when I met my cardiologist, I was kind of like Jose. They had some wonderful people there. This nurse says to me, are you a heavy drinker? I said, oh, no, I'm just a social drinker. And she says, well, booze is bad for you. It's a poison. And I said, well, I said, I don't know what the hell they teach you at Vanderbilt. I said, but where I come from, booze fixes everything. Well, then this damn cardiologist come by, and he says to me, he says, Herb, you're going to have to quit drinking, and you're going to have to start taking care of yourself. I'm thinking, duh, I never thought about that. And the surprising thing about cardiologists, he improved my hearing. Since then, I started listening to medical people, you know, sponsors, parents, kids, people at work. There's a lot less idiots at work today than there were then. Anyway, I'm grateful that my sponsor hounded me and told me I needed to come to the Rock. I'm thankful for every person that I've met here, everything I've heard here. I'm grateful for this program that's kept me alive. I never thought I'd live this long. I had a friend ask me, he says, would you do anything different if you had the chance? And I look back and I says, I don't think I'd change anything. I said, my dad died at 55. He didn't drink. He didn't smoke. He didn't do the wild and crazy things that I did. I did a bunch of crazy stuff. I lived through it. I got sober. And I met all these wonderful people. And I'm older than 55 now. And I'm grateful to be here. Glad to have been able to share with you. I hope you hear something good this weekend you can take home and help it improve your life. Thank you.